You think it's confusing now about the Republican presidential candidates? Wait till this program's over. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principled Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaelis.
Hey, good to be back with you here in the studio. Good to be talking about some of these issues. And unfortunately, we've got to deal with this mess that we've got coming up.
Well, and you're right, Charles, and it is a mess. People are trying to figure out, well, what do we do? You know, it's early. We're talking about the November 2016 elections, which if you look at your calendar, ladies and gentlemen, it's just now turning August.
16 months.
So we got 16 months until we actually have to cast a vote. That should be plenty of time of figuring out who your best candidate's going to be. But you really don't have that much time because the primary season will be over with by May of next year. And so then you're looking at a shorter time window, shortened by about 6 months. So you're looking at 10 months between now and the end of primary season to figure out and go to the polls. And in Ohio, that poll date will be March the 15th now.
Got to be early.
Well, it's actually got to be late because we'd lose out on all the goodies from the RNC if we didn't change it, which the legislature did. But you've got to make a decision. And folks, I know it's confusing. You know, that's why we're here to help you today.
we'll see how much help we can actually
because be. I know that many people have probably sat there and thought, well, number one, it's too early to think about. Number two, there are too many people in the race to make a good choice. We've got 16 people in the Republican primary, right, Chuck?
Wrong.
You're right. Okay, you got me on this one. And this is what we want to talk about today, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to do a brief, and I do mean brief, run-through of every Republican candidate that has declared or filed for the nomination of the Republican Party for President of the United States for the 2016 election. And Chuck, you and I did a head count before we came on air. There are not 16 candidates. Those are just the top, the marquee stars that Fox News is going to recognize. Oh,
right.
By the way, breaking news, and it's not breaking anymore. It was breaking when we recorded this. But breaking news is Fox has decided that they are going to change their rules on the debate coming up on August the 6th, which is next Friday. And they're going to have actually two levels of the debates. The first level, the main show, is going to be at 9 p.m., broadcast live on Fox, I'm assuming, amongst the 10 candidates who poll the highest in an average of 5 national polls that Fox News recognizes and will calculate, which means that they can somewhat cherry-pick if they feel like.
Exactly.
Now, to make sure that they completely cherry-pick, what they've decided to do was they've created an undercard. This is almost like a boxing match.
That's right.
Fox News created
also
an undercard.
Appearing.
Also appearing at the 5 o'clock hour in Cleveland at the Quicken Loans Arena for their own version of the debate. I guess this is the warm-up to the real thing. I'm guessing that the questions that the 5 o'clock crowd will get are going to be different than the 9 o'clock crowd so that the 9 o'clock crowd can't prepare as well for them. But at 5 p.m. on Friday, they're going to be hosting the rest of those candidates, the other 6 candidates, the ones who, by the time they're cut off, and their cutoff is on the 4th at 5 p.m., so at 5 p.m. on the 4th, that's when Fox will tabulate the latest polls and figure out who the top 10 are. Now, those who don't look like they're going to make the top 10 include John Kasich, Ohio's own. Although I heard somebody the other day thinking, well, he's showing up on all these polls. He'll probably make it. It's like, no, he probably will not make
happen.
The top 10. If he does, well, you know, more power to him. That's great because seeing him get hit with some hard questions on live and prime time, I think would probably be a good thing for him. But it would include people like John Kasich, Carly Fiorina, who is from the and we'll talk more about where they're from and who they are in a little bit, and somebody who you and I both know, Lindsey Graham, who the U.S. Senator from South Carolina, who we're both sitting here wondering, why in the world is he in this race? There's no way in the world he's ever going to pull this off.
Yeah, exactly, unless it comes down to, you know, perhaps Jeb Bush will... who knows, break a leg or something.
Knows, yeah.
And all the other, one by one, all the GOP establishment candidates will have to pull out for one reason or another.
Yes.
And the only one left in line would be Lindsey Graham versus maybe a Scott Walker or
Well, we'll figure that out.
Name a name.
You want me to name names? We're going to name a lot of names.
We're going to name a lot of names today.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, what you've been what's being touted across the airwaves by Fox News and others is that there are 16 Republican presidential contenders. Well, actually, and to be completely truthful about it, there are actually 32 Republican presidential candidates or declared candidates for the office of president on the Republican ticket. And we thought we'd do a public service today on this program and give you a brief thumbnail of each of these 32 candidates because we believe that you should be a fully informed voter. Yes, you're not voting for another 10 to 18 months, depending on whether or not you actually show up for primary elections or not. But you should know that, and by the time we get there, that number is going to be winnowed quite significantly, and probably is already winnowed quite significantly as we look at some of these people and their backgrounds. So, yeah, exactly. Because, again, this is a situation, Chuck, where you have people who run for president because they really strongly believe, based upon their networks, their wealth, their experience, and their coalition building among the Republican Party, that they have a legitimate shot at being president of the United States. On the other hand, you have people who they're just they don't like the way things are running, and they don't like the way the establishment, the GOPE, as you referred to them earlier, the GOPE are handling things in this country, and so they have better ideas, they believe, and so they jump in. Now, Charles, you and I both know that that's where I pull out the duct tape and I start taping my head before it explodes, because honestly, folks, there's nothing that bothers me more than a first-time candidate, a neophyte, deciding that they need to run their first time ever out of the gate involved in campaign politics. They've got to run for president or for the United States Senate or for the United States Congress. And so, and in some cases, even for the State House of Representatives or State Senate. Because honestly, ladies and gentlemen, I don't discount that many of these people have good hearts, that they really strongly feel passionately about the issues of the day and what's wrong with our country and want to see it fixed. I give them that. What I don't get is how they think that with no intersect whatsoever in their entire lives prior to pulling Federal Election Commission paperwork and filing and paying money to do it, to get their name out there, wherever it goes, that they decided the first time they want to engage in any kind of campaign politics is by running for the most powerful office in the country. You know, let's just use basic logic. If you don't know what you're doing, any train will get you there, except if you, there is not a destination you have a ticket for. And most of these people haven't even thought about buying a ticket, much less getting on the train. So we're going to be talking about a few of these, but we're going to be very brief on the – not just the – because there are some in here that are part of what I call the second 16 that I think actually probably would be great folks if they would run for local office. You know, if they'd run for their township trustees or county commissioner seats or city council seats or even actually get appointed to something or – although I'm not nearly as plussed on this as some of our friends in the conservative slash Christian evangelical movement is, of running for their local county central committee seats of whatever party they're in. Now, I say that because we're purely nonpartisan in this. We'll beat up on Republicans and Democrats with both the same fervor and passion that we do. And we don't really think that one party has got the magic bullet, magic formula, secret sauce over the other one.
Not hardly.
Because now we're seeing how they both cook in the kitchen, and really when it gets right down to it, neither dish is very appetizing. So, you know, we're going to do this, but we're going to talk about folks in the second 16 as well. Now, we're getting this from an interesting website called the Politics and Elections Portal. As I mentioned to Chuck earlier when I found this, I think this was probably set up by some liberal group because of some of the ways they phrase things in regard to Republican politics.
I'll be quite honest, I'm looking at some of these descriptions, And what I'm seeing is stuff that honestly looks like it was pulled off their websites
or off their information. Yeah, but I'm talking about the introductory stuff.
Oh, sure,
it gives you a flavor for it. But it's at 2016.republican-candidates.org if you want to look it up, and we'll link this on the page when we post this up after we air this program. But we're going to go through here, and in the next amount of time that we have, we're going to quickly go through the declared Republican Party presidential candidates for 2016. And we're going to start off with, and just like this website does, we're going to start at the beginning, start with the A's, with Skip Andrews.
Well, yes. as Julie Andrews said, let's start at the very beginning. It's the very fine place to start.
That's right. Well, Skip Andrews is a declared Republican candidate who is age 66 and is a business owner. And he was born actually at a U.S. Army hospital in Frankfurt, Germany. His parents were members of the Army Air Corps. Grew up in Colorado and New Mexico and attended Brigham Young and earned a degree in marketing. So he has become, he obviously, from what I can tell of the flavor of this, he's Mormon. Because he took off time from his study to serve as a missionary for his church in the South American nation of Chile. He's in Olathe, Kansas, so he's coming to us from Kansas, and he works in the construction industry where he owns a remodeling business. Now, he believes in the concept of American exceptionalism, and he believes that the U.S. has been blessed by the hand of God, who personally chose it, the United States, to serve Jesus Christ.
Another clue, by the way,
that he's more
BYU attendee.
Well, that's true, although you don't have to be Mormon to
get
BYU.
Not necessarily, but...
Basically, he says that all Americans must, quote, live by the moral laws that Jesus taught, unquote, and obey the Ten Commandments. But he says that when it gets down to the whole issue of life, he's pro-life, but he allows exceptions for the life of the mother and in rape and incest and when the child suffers from physical or mental disabilities that would cause it to have a, quote, meaningless, unquote, life. His words. He supports enforcement of immigration laws, but he wants a path to citizenship for those already here. And he basically supports the full legalization of all drugs and an end to the drug war.
And if you'll note that that's characterized as a leftist position.
Yes.
No, it's not. It's a libertarian position.
It's a libertarian position.
A leftist position would essentially be that the government would supply everyone's drugs.
Well, that's true. That's true.
That would be a true leftist position, and that they would be free of charge. The characterizations to the side. I want to know who gets to determine what a meaningless life would be. Who's the judge of that? He's got issues.
Okay.
But the idea that somehow people who would be pro-life would be necessarily anti-marijuana.
Well, I don't know, and we'll get into that later because there's more coming. And I want to move to our next candidate, and that is declared candidate George Bailey. Yes, it's a wonderful life, ladies and gentlemen. At least it is for – maybe it's not so much for George Bailey. George Brent Bailey Jr., who is a pastor and lives in the state of Mississippi. He has three degrees and has completed a dissertation for a PhD in philosophy and has seven certifications. His professional career includes military service, educational work, and business ownership. Now, remember, these are all coming from this website, so I'm just quoting it for you. He's an ordained Christian minister and has spent a great deal of time in that capacity. Currently working as a pastor, he boasts that each of his two ex-wives has accused him of being a, quote, fool for God, unquote. He credits them for their truthfulness. I gotta admit, I like this
website.
You gotta
like this guy, yeah.
But basically, he's very conservative, strictly pro-life, and says that basically people who support the practice while opposing capital punishment are hypocrites. In other words, if you support abortion and oppose capital punishment, you're being a hypocrite. I think he's got a good point there. He basically wants us to secure our borders, no amnesty, and then the institution of a 10-year probationary entry program. He decries American dependence on foreign energy and faults unelected bureaucracies like the EPA for exercising virtuously limitless power to hamstring U.S. coal and oil drilling. He opposes any and all gun control, is against Obamacare, and believes that marriage was designed by God as an institution between one man and one woman. He basically decides that he is very much probably to the very right of the Republican spectrum in this race. And that's great because honestly, he sounds like a pretty good guy. He not sure how old he is because he doesn't give any of that information out. He does have a number of medical issues that are in this website. You can go look at this if you want to. And he is legally handicapped. But he tries to stay involved. And again, he's a pastor from Mississippi. Mr. Bailey is also of African American descent. So I think it's interesting that, you know, he is really, this sounds like a more thoughtful, biblically thoughtful version of Ben Carson.
Yeah.
If that's really kind of where it comes to. So anyhow, so that's George Bailey, who is also part of the, what I call the second 16. The third person on the second 16 platform is Republican presidential candidate Michael Bickelmeyer, who lists himself as a creative dreamer. Okay, which that's great. Okay, and he has an associate's degree from Cuyahoga Community College. So I'm not sure if he is in Ohio or not. I have not seen. They do not give any information on where he's from, and he also has a master's of management degree from the University of Phoenix. He goes to some different things. He calls federal projects that he's securing patents for a square-shaped airport with steam-heated runways and an industrial facility at the center. The independent industrial recycling plant utilizing 5 high-volume furnaces, and that these would be powered via clean energy generation. So that's great. I appreciate the fact that he's wanting to think about these things and move them forward. I'm not sure that any of these actually do require constitutionally any kind of federal involvement at all. Maybe the airport thing. Maybe.
Okay. Looking at this guy's resume, he's what is sometimes called a crunchy con.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
He is sort of wacky. If I hate to put it that way, but it's sort of a wacky environmental. I mean, this stuff about his weapon idea.
Oh yes, I was looking at
his
that, yes.
Concentrated solar energy to be, you know, concentrated on a particular site as a weapon.
Well, he's saying that basically it could be magnified and directed as a lethal beam from space, an orbital weapons platform that could be as precise to eliminate a single personal target. I'm sorry, I don't think we want government to have that. They're probably pretty close to that already.
I was going to say.
We don't want to encourage them any further if we don't mind.
Yeah, so, okay.
So that is Michael Bickelmeyer's campaign in a nutshell.
And folks, by the way, I would suggest you go to our page, www.principledpolicy.com, and pull up this link that we're going to put in.
Yes.
Because it also links out to most of their campaign websites where you can get the information straight from the horse's mouth.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
and coming up, our next horse is declared Republican candidate Kerry Bowers, who is a veteran and volunteer spokesperson with Americans for Fair Taxation. Now, Mr. Bowers comes to us from Nevada, and he has a great long background in corrections and law enforcement, electronic engineering, business administration. The list goes on. This guy's got a fairly extensive biography on this site, so we're not going to go through all of this. Basically, a strong fiscal conservative with a dim view of currently prevailing American economic policy. And he basically says, he notes somewhat sardonically that if the nation's income to debt ratio were an income mortgage ratio, it would qualify for the Federal Home Loan Mortgage Modification Program. In other words, we're underwater, ladies and gentlemen, is what he's saying.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. So he's an advocate for a balanced budget, calling for zero debt liability and long-term reduction in the existing money owed by the federal government. And so basically he also is, believes that, we should protect our borders. We should basically deport illegal immigrants who are already in the country. declares himself a Christian, and you know, says that his beliefs will guide his personal decisions. He doesn't really say specifically what flavor of Christian he is, but there is a note here that says that he feels no threat to his religious liberty from the suppression of Christian icons in public spaces. Read, posting the Ten Commandments, crosses,
right. Yeah.
etc., and welcomes that action if it will mollify atheist groups. Well, this gentleman is showing that he really doesn't have a good understanding of what the end game is for atheist groups.
Right.
I don't think the mollify is the word I would use.
Yeah, if we this is the old lie that if we just give them what they want, they'll be quiet and go away.
Mm-hmm.
This is why those kind of negotiations with groups like the Taliban and ISIS don't work.
Yes. Now, Mr. Bowers here is a realist, it says. It says that he acknowledges with impeccable aplomb that his chances of winning the presidential election may well be remote. It may well be. But if you look at the first 16, Kerry Bowers might actually have some chance of moving forward. Yeah. I don't know. And then our next candidate is one everybody's heard of, Jeb Bush. John Ellis Bush, the former governor of Florida, born and raised in Texas, has a degree in Latin American affairs as a background. He was the Secretary of Commerce in Florida in 1986. Supported George Bush's father's bid for the White House.
Big shock.
Later. won the office of governor of Florida in 1998 and was the first two-term Republican gubernatorial administration in the history of the state of Florida. And so he says that he has a solid conservative record on a number of issues from his term as Florida's governor. Okay, now, Charles, here's something that I want to bring up for all of the governors who are running for president. The only thing that really can decide what your conservative record is are the personnel you hire and the orders that you issue. Because signing a bill does not make you a policy leader as a conservative.
That's right. All it does is say you know you've lost on this one if you don't support it, and you better do it or you're not going to get reelected.
So please, ladies and gentlemen, if you're listening to us on this, don't fall for this false platitude by any of the governors who are running for the presidency that their record as governor shows their conservative. It's like
this is like Bill Clinton claiming credit for welfare reform.
Right, he didn't do it.
He didn't do it, and he didn't want it.
Yes, let it go into law, and then they can ride on those coattails for the rest of their lives if it works. But be careful on that. He supports the death penalty. He reduced taxes while in office, which actually he has to reduce taxes with the support of, where do appropriations bills come from? The legislature.
The House.
Not from the governor.
Yeah.
He can propose a budget and then they get to play with it. Ask John Casey. He proposed a budget. The House and the Senate played with it. And when they got done, okay, it had part of what he wanted in it and part of what they wanted in it. So anyhow, so he says this whole idea, and he says that basically he has a lenient stance on immigration policy.
To say the least.
Right. And they say here, this is commentary by the website, says that one potential danger facing Jeb Bush that can scarcely be overstated, however, is his very name. He comes from a highly controversial Bush family, which unquestionably successful in politics, hosted the famously unpopular President George W. Now, only unpopular to those who are not Republican GOPEs. GOPEs loved Bush, and that's great.
Yeah.
And they can. That's fine. I'm not nearly as sold on him as I could be, but I'm not necessarily as down on him as other people might be. So Jeb Bush, and really what this gets down to, if you read into this carefully, he doesn't give you much specifics on what he believes or doesn't believe, as opposed to some of the candidates in the second 16 group. So that's Jeb Bush. You're going to hear a lot more about him, and most of it's going to be filtered through his campaign apparatus. So you're going to hear a lot more things that really won't tell you much more about him.
What we're going to see as we go along this list is that the bigger candidates don't say much about what their actual stands are, as opposed to the little guys. They'll tell you where they are right up front. They don't care. Mm-hmm. They know they're pretty much, they know they're not going to get elected, and yes. they're out front. Here's what I stand for. Here's right. where I am. You're not going to get Jeb Bush to be touting his stand on marijuana legalization. You're not going to be getting Jeb Bush to tout his stand
on abortion or
really, strictly speaking, where he really stands on this immigration question. He'll give you some platitudes and he'll give you some generalities. You're not going to get the real thing until he hits the office and starts implementing the policies. Yep. That's the bottom line. If you really want to know what your candidate stands for, vote for the little guy.
Yeah, that's right. And speaking of second 16 guys who made it to the big stage, our next candidate, a declared candidate, is Dr. Ben Carson. Now, Ben Carson was basically a physician who somehow got invited to give an address at the National Prayer Breakfast for President Barack Obama in 2013. And being one of those originally probably second-tier guys, in another world, Chuck, without the National Prayer Breakfast speech and everything that came around it, Ben Carson would be considered one of the second-tier guys. He would be a second 16 guy.
Yes.
But because of the elevation of his image and identity, because of that speech and what he said, with the president sitting not 10 feet from him and basically lambasting the president's keystone policy issue, Obamacare, Ben Carson's star is rising to the point where he is now considered among the top 16 and very well could be in the top 10 on that primetime debate on the 6th. Now, it's interesting because, you know, he says it himself that he is not affiliated with any political group. So he doesn't have a political ideology that he claims. He doesn't claim to be a conservative. He doesn't claim to be a liberal. He doesn't claim to be a Tea Party guy. He doesn't claim to be a GOPE. So what does he claim? He claims to be an outsider who is wanting to bring some common sense into the political realm. Which, you know what? More power to him.
Yeah.
I think it's good. Native of Detroit, Michigan, and has served as professor of neurosurgery, oncology, and pediatrics, and was the director of pediatric neurosurgery at Johns Hopkins Hospital. He's the author of 6 books, all published by Zondervan, and talk about his personal background and his philosophy of what it takes to succeed in life. And you know what? I've read a couple of those books, Doug, and they're not bad, you know? He hasn't succumbed yet to the reinventing myself because I'm running as a politician.
I've heard him speak, and he's an excellent speaker.
Yeah,
I was at an event down in Circleville in for the last presidential election, which he was a candidate as well. He was a very good speaker. He was very charismatic, very, very well-spoken, very intelligent, obviously, because, I mean, you don't get to be a neurosurgeon by being an idiot.
No. You know, he says that he is pro-life and pro-marriage. He's been critical about the theory of evolution. Those type of things are some red meat issues for voters. He attacks political correctness. But a couple of things, and this really isn't quite in his bio or this background, is that he's having some issues on his position on guns.
Yeah, he's terrible on the Second
Amendment. Which is pretty bad on the Second Amendment. And it's his pro-life position is somewhat nuanced. And we'll have more information up, you know, as we go. And hopefully there will be some questions, although I doubt it, from Fox News that they're actually going to hit any of the top 10 candidates with any, like, hard-hitting social issues, okay, unless they're just hoping to embarrass somebody.
Just a sideline real quick. Calling these things that happen on television a debate is a laugh.
Well, I'm sorry.
These are not debates. These are basically where you get up and answer a gotcha question.
Yep.
I mean, that's all it is. It's especially from the left side media. It's essentially a bunch of gotcha questions. Calling this a debate is just simply nonsense. But that being said, you got to start someplace.
Absolutely. Okay, our next candidate, probably in the second 16, is a gentleman by the name of Dale Christensen, who is from Idaho. And he has filed to be a candidate for Republican nomination for president. Has a background of entrepreneurial experiences that he has been a businessman and a business professor. Oh, well, his qualify him as a business professor. He's traveled worldwide. And according to this bio, he's a religious man with highly traditional views on faith and values religious speech as primary among the guarantees of the First Amendment. But he says he believes in the wall of separation between church and state, so his constitutional understanding is a little questionable.
Yeah.
He basically credits religion with inspiring the American abolition of slavery and the progress of the civil rights movement, holding these as examples of the necessity of religious morality in public discourse and policy. Supposedly a fiscal conservative as well, he opposes the passing of an actual BBA to the balanced budget amendment to the Constitution. Well, that's good. For fear that it will lead to overspending. So this guy has come at it from a truly pragmatic viewpoint. Is it doesn't matter what you bind them to, they will use it to find loopholes.
They'll use it to overspend, which means he's actually read the thing. Because yes. as you and I have pointed out, and I've pointed out in my debates on an Article 5 convention, where I showed the balanced budget amendment and said, look, this is basically a license to steal. He's seen it too.
Oh, sure. Now, he also wants to eliminate many social welfare programs, including Medicare and Social Security, through gradual drawdown measures. Well, my guess is that if Dale Christensen ever catches any kind of fire whatsoever,
it'll be over this.
It catches fire and like his star starts elevating at all. Somebody will use that as a means to bring him back to earth, if you know what I'm saying. And really, you know, he's an author and he's written two books about his beliefs and outlines his plan in the event he's successful in his presidential bid. So if you want to know more about the specifics of Dale Christensen's presidential aspirations, go on Amazon and look for his books. Okay, our next candidate is the governor of New Jersey, one Chris Christie, who has finally jumped in and announced, similar to John Kasich, he waited for a long time. And he was born in New Jersey, and he is now the governor of New Jersey. He has a law degree from Seton Hall and an undergraduate degree from the University of Delaware. He holds honorary doctorates from Rutgers and Monmouth Universities. Served as the U.S. Attorney for the District of New Jersey before he was the governor. And that really he has... Well, we've talked about Chris Christie on this program a lot in the past.
Yeah.
He's all over the boards. I would not necessarily paint him as either a social or a fiscal conservative in any stripe. I honestly wouldn't really paint him as a hardcore liberal in any stripe on either one of those. He's more of a pure libertarian.
He's a hardcore moderate.
Hardcore moderate. Yeah, well, that's there you go. Or what he calls on this website a conscientious conservative.
Okay, sounds
love it.
Familiar. Yeah.
I love it. When you start putting those adjectives in front of it, you know you're in trouble. He opposes the legalization of recreational marijuana, but I guess medical marijuana is perfectly fine.
I saw a headline the other day where basically Chris Christie basically said, if you like legalized marijuana, smoke all you can now. So he's not going to be getting the marijuana legalization crowd vote.
Oh, okay, I don't think he needs it. And it's interesting because on this site it says now, and while he is now conditionally pro-life, Christie used to identify as a quote a non-thinking pro-choice person unquote. He says that hearing his unborn daughter's heartbeat in utero caused his views to evolve. Now that's fine. I'm worried about how conditional he is.
Yeah, exactly.
So, but Chris Christie is one of the top 16 candidates. He's one of the guys that Fox News has extended an invite to come and debate on August the 6th. So you'll be hearing from him more in those debates.
Which debate is he in? He's got to be in the second.
I believe
second
that
tier.
Right now he is second tier, but is a potential to break over into first tier. He and John Kasich both are kind of on bubbles. Now, the other gentleman here who is not on a bubble but could end up being on a bubble depending on how much GOPE influence on Fox News there is coming up into August the 4th, and that is declared Republican candidate Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz has been in the media a lot lately, Charles, most specifically recently for standing up on the floor of the United States Senate and calling Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell to his face a liar.
Yeah. Yeah, the majority leader, his quote-unquote leader, at calling him a liar. Well, you don't get points for truth on the floor of the Senate, unfortunately. What's he going to get out of that? Well, okay, I'm going to give you a small analysis. There are two presidential candidates and one that'll come up later, and we'll bring that up when he comes up. But Ted Cruz is one of them.
Yes.
Who have noticed what one of the other candidates has done, and that is Donald Trump.
Right.
And what Trump has done is done the thing that conservatives have been wishing their candidates would do for decades, and that is when they get beat up in the press, they swing back. Republicans have a bad tendency when they get beat up in the press to go, oh, gosh, I'm sorry. I really shouldn't have said it that way. I should have said it another way, blah, blah, blah. And Donald Trump says, uh-uh. Well, Ted Cruz has noticed that has equaled success. Not saying that Cruz doesn't necessarily have this streak on his own, but the fact is there's another candidate besides Cruz that has noticed that this is successful and is following suit.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Cruz, who many of you know, is the son of a former political prisoner, and I believe that his father might be coming to Ohio sometime in the next week.
I've heard that as well, yes.
I think probably after the debate. I think there's some groups trying to get him to speak in certain locations. But basically, it says that the staunchly conservative Latino is also frequently spoken of as one of the most brilliant members of the current Congress. Okay, now that goes a long ways when he stands up on the floor and calls Mitch McConnell a liar, that this isn't some backbencher, you know, filing paperwork to unseat John Boehner, which we'll talk about in another program.
Yeah.
And once we get more information on that. It is interesting, though, because as this says, the Canada-born senator's journey. Those words right there, Chuck, I think are going to be some difficulties. And I talked about the GOPE machinations about the Fox debate. I'm guessing that between the time this program airs, maybe even before this program airs, and that debate next on that Friday night, somebody in the establishment GOP is going to be going to Fox News and saying, look, the Constitution says you have to be a native-born citizen.
Natural-born, not native-born.
Natural-born citizen, which they're going to determine as native-born. Now, you and I have talked about this.
Right.
You and I believe constitutionally, based upon what the Constitution says itself and what the philosophical import of what the founders were referencing
right.
when they were doing that, that we would probably have to reluctantly agree that Ted Cruz wouldn't qualify under the Constitution.
Ted Cruz is not a natural-born citizen. Right. Neither was Barack Obama.
Neither was Barack Obama.
And it has nothing to do with whether he was born in Hawaii or not.
No.
Which I think he probably was. That has to do with the fact of Cruz is doubly disqualified
because
he was born off U.S. soil.
And
his father, who was not an American citizen.
Right.
And your father has to be an American citizen. That's part of the criteria, which Barack Obama's wasn't. And you have to be born on U.S. soil.
Right.
And what's interesting about that, I have to laugh when I see these things. On March 11, 2015, former heads of the Office of the Solicitor General during different presidential administrations wrote an article in the Harvard Law Review arguing that Cruz is a constitutionally eligible candidate. I don't care what the Solicitor General says. If he is not reading the Constitution and he's not reading the documents, that phrase natural-born citizen was lifted whole and mm-hmm. definition were lifted whole from, he's wrong. I don't care
That's
how
right.
many degrees he has. I don't care if he went to Harvard. I don't care.
Right.
He's wrong.
And he did. He did all these things. He also was the clerk for Supreme Court Chief Justice William Rehnquist. He worked on George W.'s campaign and became W.'s chief domestic policy advisor
yeah.
for the campaign.
And
these are all great things that Ted Cruz has done, except for the fact that He wasn't born on U.S. soil, and he wasn't born to a father who was an American citizen.
We don't elect presidents anymore on the basis of natural-born citizen. If we're going to get rid of it, let's just amend it out of the Constitution.
Right, exactly. But it's in there, and so we should be following it. But my guess is you're going to end up seeing the GOPE become constitutional scholars between now and August 6th. Because Ted Cruz is probably, other than that, is probably one of the strongest candidates out there.
He's the closest
for the Republican
thing,
base.
He's the closest thing we have in the major candidates to a constitutionalist.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, he because of his background, his ethnicity, he's a little questionable on the immigration issue. But on other issues that have been put out there, he has been very solid.
How many times have we been accused of being perfectionists?
More than I care to count.
Yes, I would take Ted Cruz in a minute, despite his immigration weakness.
Sure, sure. Well, anyhow, but you know, we have a long time to decide that, though, Chuck.
That's right.
And somebody else will be deciding it for us before we even get there.
That's right. We don't really get a choice.
Well, we do, but we have to work on it a lot harder.
Yeah.
Okay, our next candidate is Brooks Collison. Brooks Collison was born in Indiana and now lives in Illinois. He has a background in international business and trade law, and was the mayor of the town of Ole, Illinois for 4 years. So, he believes that a grave threat to our country is the forces of radical Islam, especially ISIS, and compares to the communism of the old Soviet Union and the Nazism under Adolf Hitler. In other words, he invokes Godwin's law, which is a problem. So he advocates for the formation of a unique American credo to unite through democracy. Well, there he's missing the point. The varied ethnic and religious groups that comprise the United States. In other words, what he's really saying is he wants to get back to the American melting pot idea, which I've heard lately in the political correct sphere. Using the term melting pot can get you, especially in a university setting, can basically get you ostracized if not brought up on charges.
Which is amazing to me. I'm sorry.
I guess that means that the Schoolhouse Rock video, where you see them all jumping into the pot and Lady Liberty sitting in there in a bathing suit, has been banned. So Brooks Collison is looking at this whole issue and is concerned about domestic violence and homelessness, two things in which the federal government really shouldn't have any play whatsoever. Again, we need to work with a lot of these Second 16 guys on their constitutional interpretation. As a declared candidate, he opposes the deportation of illegals currently present within American borders, but he supports a strong border patrol. Okay? And he believes that the economic hardships facing illegal immigrants and the social and political issues from which they're often fleeing has been symbiotically beneficial to both parties. In other words, he's doing the idea that we're getting more than losing from people illegally immigrating into the country. I'm not sure I can agree with that.
No, I'm sorry, no.
So Brooks Collison, attorney and CPA from Illinois, that's one of your next candidates. Now, we're going to keep going. John Dummett Jr., who is a Republican declared candidate, and he is from the... I'm not even sure it says where he's from. No, it really doesn't say where he's from here. Says that he advocates a return to traditional American values, that God can and should inform a leader's governance decisions, and such decisions should be based on the maintenance and advancement of the Judeo-Christian principles held by the founders. Okay, sounds good, right? I like that. Staunchly pro-life, opposed to gay marriage, and believes that all immigrants who come to live in the U.S. must assimilate to American culture first and foremost. All right, rejects the idea of the Constitution as a living document, and said that the founders deliberately made it nearly impossible to alter, and that changes made to it since its drafting should be rectified.
Well, it's hardly impossible to alter.
Yeah,
we've done
true.
It 27 times in 200-odd years, 230 years.
Yep. He's an opponent of illegal immigration and supports a physical fence along the nation's border with Mexico, and calls for the deportation of any and all aliens the moment they're discovered. English should be the official language. So that's John Dummett in a nutshell, as a constitutional Republican, but I'm not sure where he's from and where he's filed at. So If there, you can find more information on him, good luck, because that's our one of our second tier candidates. Now we're going to keep going, and I know, okay, guys, hold with me, ladies and gentlemen, because we're getting to some of the bigger candidates later. They just happen to have names that are later in the alphabet.
Unfortunately, we're going alphabetically, and they are all the little guys are
the early
are in the
guys.
Lower part
right.
of the alphabet.
Okay, we have a former IRS commissioner now as our next declared candidate, Mark Everson.
Everson, actually.
Everson, excuse me. I see that. Everson. And basically, he owes no one. He's a constitutional conservative and argues that the power of the president are clearly defined by the boundaries that should be obeyed, never tried or overreached. He believes that re-election politics are a national ill. And he said the president should be eligible for a single term and pledges to serve only one if elected. He's doing the Calvin Coolidge approach.
Silent Cal.
Silent Cal. Former commissioner of the IRS under George W. Bush.
Boom.
Okay. Everson is vocal on the issue of taxation and supports eliminating the IRS for 150 million Americans. Chuck, there's 330 million Americans.
I was gonna say,
what happens to the other 180 million?
I guess we're still under the IRS.
I'm a little concerned about that. calling back to his other major public office role in the Immigration and Naturalization Service for Reagan, he vehemently opposes illegal immigration and fears it is an avenue for the advancement of radical Islam. Has an extremely antagonistic attitude toward large banks, speaking extensively with appalled outrage at their behavior, which he considers criminal and even treasonous. He accuses HSBC Bank of violating the U.S. Trading with the Enemy Act, claiming they allow clients to launder drug money and evade counterterrorism sanctions. Okay, so he calls out a lot of these big banks. Basically, he's really not divulging many details of the precise policies that he would enact as president. In other words, this is a guy who's worked in the GOPE, has learned the lingo, has figured out the game, and is now running in the second 16 tier. You know what, Chuck? This is the kind of individual that you kind of want to think, possibly keep an eye on, because there could be other things happening in the future. This guy is not your run-of-the-mill, I'm just a businessman, worker, and I didn't like the way things are running in the country. This is a guy who's been in the bureaucracy.
Knows how it works.
High levels of the bureaucracy, and now is saying, you know what? We got to do something about this. I'd be interested to kind of follow Everson's track here and find out what he believes on certain other issues and see if maybe there might even be some outside hope of him getting 0.5%
in
some poll.
Well, you've got your chance at www.principledpolicy.com.
That's right.
At the and follow the links, and you can look up Mark Everson's campaign website.
All right. Okay, here we have somebody in my neck of the woods, Chuck, Lowell Jackson Jack Fallure, who lives in Hurricane, West Virginia. I was just in Hurricane yesterday. No, I wasn't meeting with Jack Fallure, but I was just there. He's an engineer, and he is retired, and he has actually run in every presidential election since 1988.
Oh, he's the Harold Stassen of
the Harold Stassen of the Republican Party.
Actually, Harold Stassen was a Republican.
In 2012, he backed out of the Republican Party and ran under the Prohibition Party label.
Wow.
But he did get the nomination of the Prohibition Party for president.
As old as he is, he probably remembers the first Prohibition Party.
Okay. Now, he's got something that probably most of the second-tier candidates never had. He actually has appeared on the presidential ballot in one state in Louisiana in 2012 and has received 518 votes for president.
Well, one thing I'll have to say about Jack Fallure, and that is that he will be 80 at the end of his first term. He will be 89 years old if survives.
That's right. Now, he basically says he boasts a solid devotion to his Christian religious faith, which informs virtually every aspect of his policy positions. During one of his many presidential runs in 1992, when asked to submit his political platform to the Federal Elections Commission, Fallure provided a copy of the 1611 King James Bible. So, folks, This is a serious guy. He provided a 1611 King James, not a modern translation.
No, no new King James version.
1611.
1611.
Oh, that's great. I think this is wonderful. I love my part of the country, even you know, going across the river into West Virginia, because you got people who love God and love Him completely. And Jack Fleur's, you know, just showing that. It's like, hey, this is what I'm going to run on. This is where my policy is going to come from. He opposes abortion and especially the use of public monies to fund the procedure, supports the death penalty as a mandate by God, and yes, we can talk about that more in a future program, but he's got a point, and is for gun rights. He also calls for making homosexuality illegal in the belief it will help in combating the spread of AIDS, and as might be gleaned from his previous affiliation with the Prohibition Party, he's in favor of the banning of alcohol. That'll probably lose him quite a few votes.
He should be aware that we tried that once.
Yeah, it didn't work so
well.
It
was a little disastrous.
Okay. Well, it's looking like we're going to have a hard time getting through all 32 of these, Chuck. So we're going to keep going, and perhaps we'll have part two a little bit later. But our next candidate is probably, I think, one of only two female candidates on the Republican ticket right now, or ballot, and that is Carly Fiorina, who is the former CEO of Hewlett-Packard. And if anybody's been paying attention lately on the various news programs, Carly is starting to climb because she's starting to speak. She is another one of these candidates who Donald Trump has basically empowered to start saying what they actually think and not what the handlers give them as canned responses to these issues.
A difference with Fiorina is that she runs rings around these people rhetorically in a little more refined fashion than Donald Trump.
Oh, she's very good at it.
She's very good at it.
Whereas Trump uses a machete, she uses a scalpel.
Yes.
It's good. Now, I'm already happy about this first line I see in the bio. Born Kara Carlton Sneed, Carly Fiorina, who changed her name in 1985 when she married her current husband, Frank Fiorina. Okay, that tells me two things, Chuck. Number one, she's a traditionalist because she believed in taking her husband's last name. And number two, she's only been married once. That tells me a lot about her already. And so basically,
I'm not sure that's true.
Well, I think it might be. So we will see that. We'll go find that out. But I think that is the case. And so she was, until 2005, the CEO of Hewlett-Packard as well. And it says that one of her major liabilities is a complete lack of a political resume, as she's never held any public office. Okay, Chuck, there's an equation that you have to remember in politics. If you have been the CEO of a major Fortune 500 company, it's almost exactly the same as being in political office, in the sense of the decisions you have to make, the personnel you have to work with, the budgets that you have to be responsible for. There's an awful lot. The only thing is you're answered to a board of directors and board of shareholders rather than to a voting public.
If anything, in the modern sense, it's tougher to be a CEO than a president because even though the president is supposed to have to answer to Congress, when was the last time Barack Obama actually answered to Congress?
Let's see. He was elected and took office in 2009. I think it was the last time.
By the way, Fiorina's been married before.
Okay. Thank you for checking on that. Okay. So she tried to run for U.S. Senate against Barbara Boxer, but she got beat.
And didn't do too badly considering the political condition of the state of California.
No, absolutely not at all.
She did very well, in fact.
Okay. She opposes abortion. And we know that because we can link this up. There's a video of her answering some questions when they tried to do the old trick and trap on the abortion question, which she hung them out to dry on.
Yep.
It was probably one of the better defenses of pro-life that I've heard in a long time. Also, she's critical of fears over climate change. In other words, she's not buying all of the Al Gore inconvenient truths.
Well, man-made climate change.
Yeah. And believes that cap and trade is going to be prohibitively costly in the amount of jobs that stand to be lost in it. And she said she herself voted for a measure to legally define marriage as a heterosexual union between man and one woman. So in other words, she's actually come out and said, no, I don't just support it, I voted for it. Which, puts her, separates her from a lot of that pack.
Exactly. Apparently, she's a little soft on that, but she's still harder than some.
Yep. Now, it said that she's been criticized for her Senate campaign that finished $500,000 in debt, which it still has not repaid. Okay, yeah, that could be a potential problem. But then again, if you're not, it's hard for somebody to pay off a campaign debt because all the money has to go into the campaign to pay it off. So unless you still raise money after you've lost a race, which, trust me, is infinitesimally more difficult than if you win the race.
I will say one thing about that, and I will hearken back to the days of yore. Democratic National Telethon.
Yes.
Do you remember the Democratic National Telethon? Yes. Okay, after the 1972 election in which George McGovern got absolutely shellacked unfortunately, by Richard Nixon.
Yeah.
They were $9 million in debt. And let me tell you something, $9 million in 1972 doesn't sound like that much now.
That's an awful lot of money in 1972 dollars.
That was roughly the equivalent of $90 million.
Yeah.
So they actually had to have a telethon to get people to call in so they could pay off their campaign debts. So I don't want to hear that. I'll be quiet. That kind of stuff. Does she need to repay it?
Yeah, she does.
John Glenn essentially stiffed
over $3 million of his presidential campaign debt
in 84.
Yep.
So, sorry, don't want to hear it.
Yeah, well, and the point is that she ran against Barbara Boxer, I believe, in 2010. So, you know, it's been 5 years. Yeah, she should be getting that paid off. That's going to be a problem for her. But otherwise, she sounds strongly conservative on just about every other issue. Now, we'll learn more about Fiorina because she is also one of those people who are probably on the bubble and is right now probably makes it in the top 10, but maybe not. Now, we're going to end up today, and then we'll come back later with the rest of the group. So, yeah, all of you guys who are waiting on us talking about John Kasich are going to have to wait a week by talking about the senator from South Carolina, Lindsey Graham. And I think this is a great place to stop today because Lindsey Olin Graham from the state of South Carolina has probably the most interesting candidate out there right now.
Wow, you're a master of the understatement.
This, shall we say, and I love the terms that the website uses, centrist. Yes, moderate. But it says that he actually has a 90% voting record in favor of the conservative agenda. I'd like to know from who he's getting that vote count.
Where did that, unfortunately, that's this website. Whose count are you taking?
Mm-hmm. Actually, Lindsey Graham has probably been one of the more liberal voices in the GOP Senate caucus. Matter of fact, on most issues, if you really look at Lindsey Graham, he's a rhino, Republican in name only. He has support, and he tries to support Barack Obama in any move he makes, almost to an issue. So, you know, he believes, and he says that he makes no apologies for his bipartisan approach in Congress, read sellout to the other party.
Reach across the aisle.
Yep. Explaining that the party has shifted too far to the right, and argues that even Ronald Reagan would have a hard time getting elected as a Republican today. I don't think that's quite true.
No, I'm in fact, I'm absolutely certain that's not true.
So anyhow, and he said, but you know, even though he got rebuked by his own home county party, he basically reminded everybody before he won re-election, "I'm going to get re-elected if I'm doing smart things for people in the county, in the country, and the party, and I care about the party, not just me." Well, right there is my problem with Lindsey Graham. He cares about the party more than he cares about the people he serves.
Okay, here's how he won. Basically, a Tea Party candidate came out and ran against him, and they ran a faux conservative to split the vote, which Graham was guaranteed to get. That's what the party did. So, yeah, he's doing for the party what the party did for him.
Yeah, exactly. Now, and basically, he said, "The worst thing that'll happen to me is I'll go home and practice law." The worst thing. Okay, Chuck, what that tells me is he has got beltwayitis. He likes
he likes
the trappings that come with being a United States senator, and now he's trying to get the trappings of coming with president. You know, he gets invited to the White House dinners. He wants to be the one issuing the invites. That's where Lindsey Graham is. Now, he's going to be on that main, most likely going to be on the main stage. or at least at the 5 o'clock hour. He won't be on the 9 o'clock because I don't think he's going to make the polling. He'll be on at the 5 o'clock hour, and you'll get to hear more. Well, maybe you won't get to hear much more because, honestly, folks, this quote-unquote appearance, I won't even call it a debate, Chuck's right, this appearance is going to be a highly scripted pre-launch of their PR campaigns for president. Okay, that's all it's going to be.
Okay, we're out of time.
I figured we would be.
We're way out of time. Go to www.principledpolicy.com. Look for this posting when we post it up as a podcast. It will have the links attached so you can go out and read more detailed things than we've given you, and you can actually go out to the website from the more detailed. Again, www.principledpolicy.com. And join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.